The Babylon Podcast was our last best hope for B5 fans. A self-contained show, 1 hour long, located on an RSS feed. A place for interviews and episode discussions for a whole bunch of humans and aliens. A shining beacon in cyberspace, all alone on the web. It was the dawn of the third age of podcasting, the year the Lost Tales came upon us all. This is the podcast about the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2007. The name of the show is The Babylon Podcast.
Go ahead.
Welcome to another edition of The Babylon Podcast.
Yeah, it's a well-oiled machine around here.
And I'm surprised to be on it, and I'm Tim Adamick.
And I'm not surprised to be on it, and I'm Tim Adamick. This is a train wreck already, isn't it?
It truly is.
Hi, kids. It's Jeffrey Willis calling from downtown Hollywood. The top is down, the palm trees are above my head, and it's an all-boys night again this week on the Babylon Podcast, where we laugh and make fun of Summer Brooks all night long.
She's going to listen to this one and go, oh, she's never coming back after it. After we get through ruining
it. Oh, I guarantee she's in the chat room right now throwing daggers at you.
I'm on the other side of the country.
Well, Summer's got a heck of an arm, so.
Now, okay, let's start off. There's some extremely good news. And we've been inundated at the Babylon Podcast Gmail account with everybody who is spreading this wonderful news. And that is, over on Amazon.com, you can pre-order Babylon 5, The Lost Tales. And the real kicker is, it's going to retail for $24.98 or $25. But if you pre-order before, I think, June, I don't have it in front of me, so there. Anyways, if you pre-order it, they knock off about $5 from that, $5 to $10 off of that.
Ooh, yeah.
So, yeah, for about $16, you can pre-order Babylon 5, The Lost Tales. And as the emails were flooding in and just kind of keeping track on it, it soared to number 5 on the list
on
Amazon.com.
Wow. On Amazon's selling list?
Yeah.
Nice. That takes a lot of orders.
There's one more option there, Tim. You can send $30 to Farpoint Media, and we will pre-order for you.
There
you don't have to do a thing. Give us your money.
I like the way you think.
Oh, yeah, that's probably your better option, people, because you can hear how organized we are running this thing, so you know that your money will be well taken care of.
I have an old sweat sock behind the couch that I'm sure will be just fine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it smells like a Pachamara, but whatever. It's okay.
So are they doing HD or Blu-ray or any of that, or is it just standard DVD?
Don't know. I think it's, you know what, Tim, I don't know. I'm not even going to hazard a guess. Because I don't have HD or any of that fun stuff, I never pay attention to it. So
all right.
I would be surprised if it's not HD, only because Babylon 5 as a production has a history of being, if not cutting edge, certainly on the leading wave of technologies.
Right.
So take it for what that's worth. So that's exciting.
Well, won't you just shut up if they shot that in HD, huh?
Oh, that would be...
No, it's impossible to shut me up.
Well, I have an extra little tidbit of news to go along with that is after so long of not getting any response back from Warner Brothers about having their publicity department help facilitate getting the Lost Tales story out to us, there was at least a voicemail exchange between WB and I today, and I can't say that it yielded anything other than, hey, heard you called, we're trying to get in touch with you, and I called back and said, hey, sorry, I'm trying to get in touch with you, so hopefully by next week's show, we'll have made contact, and we'll see it seems to be that Warner's does have is expressing interest in letting us be one of the outlets to get all the freshest news out to the world.
Wow! Woohoo! Very nice.
That would be fabulous.
Well, it'd just be nice if we could get, you know, I mean, it would be great to be able to go back and get some of our guests, you know, and on the show and be doing it through the proper channels rather than me just backdooring on Friendship, you know, and that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I know.
But it also gives us an air of legitimacy. Right. It also gives us an air of legitimacy. You know, you could, like I said, yeah, you see how well run this outfit is, so.
Right, exactly.
When they ask to hear the podcast, Jeffrey, go through and say, listen to show number X, Y, and Z. Stay away from the holiday special. Stay away from Robin Aiken Downs' interview. You know?
Actually, we should offer a special bonus box set that just has all of my yak and cut out. And if it was just you and Summer, it would really be a good series. Everybody would enjoy it.
I don't know. Jeffrey. I think a box set with you and Robin could be fun, too.
Yeah, but then it's no longer a legitimate broadcast.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, we could shape the package like the box that Robin's living in, so...
Oh, ouch.
Anyways, well, I have one last little piece to offer up, and I do so modestly, he says. Merle Lafferty's Geek Fu Action Grip, the current episode, 95, features a bit of fan fiction by yours truly, Tim Callender.
Ooh.
Yes. I don't know if how many people out there are fans of Geek Fu, and if you are not, you ought to be, because Merle Lafferty is a wonderful writer. She just finished up part two of her podcast novel, Heaven, part two being Hell, and then opened it up for fan fiction submissions. And although I'm not, don't consider myself a writer, I was inspired and sent in my little offering, and Mer loved it and liked it so much that she even read it on her show. So,
very nice.
There's a reason. Yeah, well, there's a reason I bring it up, only because it will be of minor interest to Babylon 5 fans, and I will say no more.
You see that, Mike? You really are hanging with a celeb tonight.
Wow, I tell you, I feel honored.
It's a man of many talents.
It's great.
Are you talking about me?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. With that, let's break.
And we'll be back with our interview with Gene Cavellis.
It's back and it's better than ever. August 31st through September 3rd, downtown Atlanta, DragonCon presents Podcasting Now and Beyond with screaming turbo action. Sponsored by Farpoint Media and Skepticality at the downtown Atlanta Hilton, Marriott, and the Hyatt. It's the largest convention of its kind in the world. Podcasting events for all 4 days. Special guests and popular podcasters include Skepticality, Keith and the Girl, Farpoint Media, Scott Sigler, J.C. Hutchins, The Signal, and many, many more. Here are some of your favorite shows being recorded live. Podcasting parties all through the weekend, including Scott Sigler's podcast Players Ball on Friday. Go to www.dragon-pod.com for the latest information.
And welcome back to the Babylon Podcast. Today, we would like to welcome Gene Cavellis.
Hello, Gene.
And for everyone who is familiar with the plethora of Babylon 5 novels out there, they will remember that she has written the best ones.
Oh, thank you very much. How sweet.
You're very welcome.
Well, Gene, I would say that there are a number of listeners to our podcast who would like to shake your hand because you have changed my perception of the Technomages with your trilogy.
Oh, in what way?
In a positive way, actually. I was never a big fan. I liked Galen from Crusade well enough, but I was not particularly taken with Elric and the Technomages when they came through the station during the episode Geometry of Shadows.
Mm-hmm.
And as longtime listeners know, I'm not big on the fantasy thing. I like my science fiction hard and straight up. However, what you did with those characters and with the Technomages in your trilogy really changed my perception of that. And I guess to start off the questioning is, how did you come to write the Technomage trilogy?
Well, it's kind of a long story, but I'll try to give you the short version. I mean, the direct reason was that I had written The Shadow Within, which was one of the earlier Babylon 5 novels, and I think Joe and the people at Warner Brothers liked it, and when the Babylon 5 books moved from Dell to Del Rey, the editor at Del Rey wanted to do these three trilogies, or I guess he, in consultation with Joe, had decided to do these three trilogies as a way of bringing more attention to the books. And he said he was interested in having me write one of them because he had liked the previous book. So I was pretty excited about that. When he said he wanted me to write the Technomage trilogy, it took me a few minutes to decide that was a good thing because I was a little bit like you. I can't remember exactly when it was that he told me this, but basically, there was the Geometry of Shadows, which I thought was cool and interesting, but there wasn't much there. So I wasn't really sure what direction this trilogy would go in. What was the story of the Technomages? And figuring that out and developing them was wonderful, was such an exciting opportunity for me. I really loved it because the Technomages are kind of a little bit, I guess, I see myself in them, and I guess that's what writers do, is they write about themselves, and they're, you know, write what you know. And I started out in science, and then I went into writing, so I have the science and the artistry sort of fighting for dominance inside of me, and so do the Technomages. That's something I really like about them.
Okay. One of the things that was very intriguing about that, and I guess what was different with your trilogy as opposed to the other two, the Psycor trilogy and the Fall of Centauri Prime, is that events in your books intimately wrap themselves around with incidences that we see from the actual show.
Yeah.
And how was that, what kind of difficulties did you face with that?
Holy cow. that makes it really hard. Writing a tie-in to an existing universe, I think, is one of the most challenging things to do because you have to be consistent with all these previously existing facts that everybody knows, and especially Babylon 5 fans. They know everything. And so trying to connect closely to particular episodes like the Geometry of Shadows made it even more difficult because I had to make sense of the story for myself. You know, Joe gave me his outline with, you know, this happens, which was, you know, very general but really interesting. And I had to develop it in a way that would make sense to me, while at the same time fitting it in with all of these established facts. You know, we see Elric on the station, we see what he says, we see what he does. That can't change. And yet, I wanted to bring something to it, so I'm not just novelizing the episode, but I'm actually revealing that more happened. And I thought, especially with the Technomages, you can't have it that just the surface of appearances is what's really happening, because they're all about deceit and they're all about misdirection, just like magicians. And so there has to be a secret, secret agenda, secret activities that are going on under the surface and still keep the same surface. And that was really tough. I think of it as like a puzzle that's all done except for one piece. And the one piece is what I'm writing. And so I have to follow the outline of the whole that's there, and I have to have the colors match and all that, and yet I have to do something that has integrity in and of itself in the book.
Well, that was one of the things that really helped change my mind about the Technomages, what you did with that. Given that surface appearance that you talk about that we see in Geometry of Shadows, they appear to be all-knowing and all-powerful, and for whatever reason, they're leaving. But as you unfold the events, what we're getting is an order in disarray that's in conflict with itself and is dying off. And the scenes that you write around the scenes of Elric we see during the show are great, because you show him as a man of power who is now losing his power and trying to hold it together long enough to carry off this massive deception against an enemy that's greater and more powerful than they are. And it gives a poignancy to it.
Well, I think their situation is really tragic in the whole trilogy, because they each took the tech for their own reason, but generally the Order is trying to do good, but they're trying to do good using a power that they got from somewhere bad. And now
Right. They
have to choose to either give up the power, give up everything, or collaborate with the enemy. And I think they make a good choice in the episode. It appears kind of like they're cowardly. That's what I thought when I first saw the show. I thought, oh, these bums are just running away. But you don't know why. And then in the books, I have this great piece of information to reveal about why they're running away, why they have to.
Regarding that, how much of what we see in the trilogy is Gene Cavellos, and how much of it is Joe Straczynski, and how much of it was give and take between the two of you in writing the trilogy?
Well, certainly there is, there is a lot of Joe. It's his universe. It's his characters. He knew the secret of the Technomages. When I first read the outline that he had written for this trilogy, and I got to that part that revealed the secret, it was like, oh my God, somebody just gave me the most wonderful gift. This is the best story in the world to be able to write. You know, having that revelation makes the whole story powerful, potentially powerful anyway. There was not a lot of character development about Galen, Elric, or there really weren't any other Technomages mentioned, I guess, except for Alwyn. I think that's, and Isabel, of course. So I think I made up all the other Technomage characters. And I made up, like, their government and their rules and all that stuff and the spells and how that works, the magic. None of that was really developed except, of course, what you see on the show. So it had to fit with that. I think the main thing that I contributed was really the Galen storyline, as far as him discovering this deep source of power and becoming this super weapon. That was not in the outline. And him having to cope with that, having this incredible power, but it's all for destruction. And how do you live with that, especially when you're very, very angry because everyone you love is being killed? So that was kind of my part to it, I think.
So how much of the backstory, how much was revealed to you by JMS that might have eventually been included in Crusade?
He didn't really reveal anything
to me.
Oh. I'll tell you, if you think the authors of the book know all the secret information, oh my gosh. He had, I didn't know anything happening in Crusade until it aired on television. And he had written several episodes for Crusade. I think there were two others that never got filmed, that the scripts appeared on the internet sometime later. And they're all about Galen, you know, encountering shadow technology and kind of hinting at the situation and revealing a lot more stuff that is really not consistent with my books, because I didn't know about those scripts. He didn't send me the scripts. I saw them on the internet after somebody told me about them, and I had to read them there. So he plays it very close to the vest. He does not give out anything more than what he thinks you need to know, because, you know, it's his baby, and he didn't know how long it was going to keep going, or whether there would be, you know, more TV movies, and, you know, we have this DVD coming out soon, I guess.
Yeah. Well, how much...
Galen is appearing in that, actually.
Yeah. Mm. Well, how much input or revisions did he have, if any, when you finished the manuscript, the draft for the books?
In the first novel I did before the trilogy, The Shadow Within, he had a couple pieces of feedback. I talked to him once during the writing of the book and asked him a few things, like, could I give Morden a first name, or did he have one already? And Joe said, he doesn't have one, and he's not getting one. So this caused me great pain, because I had all of the archaeologists in that book, of which Morden was one, talking to each other on a first-name basis. And suddenly here's this guy, Morden, who has no first name. So I had to kind of change things around a little bit because I could not give him a first name. I had titled that book. This is a case where I sent in my own proposal and outline for a B5 novel, and they approved it. But he said, you can't call it The Shadow Awakes, because, of course, the shadows were already awake when Anna, Sheridan, and Morden went to the Hadoom, but they didn't know that. So he suggested The Shadow Within, and that became the title. So he had, like, a handful of changes on that book, but on the trilogy, he really had no changes. He just, he was terrific. I mean, he just accepted everything I did, and in many places, I really kind of pushed and twisted things to make them make sense to me and to make a compelling story, a compelling trilogy, that I think weren't exactly the way that he would have done it, but he was fine with it. And he, you know, he's only said nice things, so terrific.
Well, good. I would say one of the biggest points where you pushed, in my estimation, are the scenes on Zahadum where Galen finds himself absorbed into the eye of Zahadum. And,
yeah,
you know, that basically in the show where Sheridan calls down the White Star loaded with nukes, you give, a greater detail as to why that could happen. And I'll be honest with you, Gene, I'm not sure it works entirely for me.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, I just kind of like the idea that Sheridan was such a nexus, if you will, that and the shadows felt so confident that they didn't have any problem allowing him getting close to the planet,
mm-hmm,
and that would have allowed him to call them down the White Star. But having said that, the scenes that you write, you know, up to that point, Galen has been fighting the shadow technology and the realization, of course, he uncovers the true ultimate secret there. And
yeah,
he finds himself, by, in a sense, almost giving up, he finds the way out. And I thought those scenes were very compelling.
Thank you. The idea that Zahadum had a force field and that it needed to be turned off for Sheridan's plan to work was actually Joe's idea. That was in the outline, that there was a force field and that Galen turned it off using his shadow technology. The whole method of the eye didn't exist in the outline, or what he finds in the eye, that didn't exist in the outline. So the whole way that it happened was something that I made up, but the fact that there was one and that he turned it off and that's why Sheridan succeeded, that was in the outline.
The line you wrote, I don't have the book handy, but where he finally accepts it and the eye is trying to, you know, the eye is basically trying to compel him to blow the White Star up, and the moment is basically something to the effect of, and as the White Star came down, the eye turned away.
Mm-hmm.
It was just very well written, and I want to commend you on that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I loved writing the books. You know, I love Babylon 5. I feel so lucky that I had the chance to contribute my little bit, my little corner to the universe. It was just a wonderful experience, and also to be allowed, you know, to be given great material to work with and then be allowed to develop it in my own way was really wonderful.
As far as, now you've written other books outside mm-hmm. the Babylon 5 universe. In what sense is it easier to write for a pre-existing franchise like Babylon 5 as opposed to manufacturing your own world's whole cloth?
Well, a lot of the choices are made for you. Writing is about making decisions. You know, like they talk about in Wonder Boys, where Michael Douglas has that manuscript that's like 3,000 pages long, because he has not made any of the hard decisions. He's just including everything. And really, writing is about making the right decisions for the story. So, you know, gee, do I write about a universe where they have living ships, or do I write about a universe where they don't have space travel, or where they have space travel but it runs on, you know, gasoline or whatever? There's a million choices to make. And so when you're writing in a pre-existing universe, a lot of those choices are made, and you can focus on your characters and your particular story and just, you know, use these wonderful tools that are already there. In writing your own story, you've got to deal with all those other things, and that gives you a lot more freedom and possibility, and you can shape it to your own ends, but it's a lot more to keep track of.
Was it easier to write The Shadow Within or the trilogy? I mean, did you have more of an outline to go on with the trilogy than the standalone, or vice versa?
Well, I wrote the outline for The Shadow Within, so it was pretty lengthy because I tend to outline things to death. The same thing happened with the trilogy, because he gave me, I can't remember, maybe 12 pages of an outline, and I turned it into like 100 pages of outline because I'm insane that way. But definitely the Shadow Within was easier. It's a much simpler story. It's really two intertwined novellas. One about Anna going to Zahadum with the archaeological expedition, and one about John Sheridan in the Battle of the Line. I'm like forgetting what happened in my book. So it's really the story of the husband and the wife who are separated and they miss each other, and you cut back and forth between the two. So it's much simpler, whereas the trilogy has, I think, a pretty extensive development of Galen over the three books, that he has to go through these big changes in his personality. I mean, he's a young guy in the trilogy, and so he's still growing and learning, and you have a lot more characters, a lot more going on to keep track of.
Now, the one thing that I'm hoping maybe you can fill in, at the end of the Technomage trilogy,
mm-hmm.
Galen is basically at his post observing the outside universe from the hiding place where the Technomages, what's left of their order, had decided to just kind of hole up and let the storm burn out.
Right.
Now, and at that point in time, as you've written it, Galen comes to a certain measure of peace and acceptance. What is it in your mind, and just you as the author who's, you know, been engaged in this universe and these characters, what is it that has happened that brings Galen out of the hiding place to interact with the universe once again, as we see in Crusade and as we're going to see in The Lost Tales?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. I can't remember if I once had an answer to that question. As I think about it now, I think that he must have felt a need, like, you know, bad things happening and he needs to go out and deal with them, but also an assurance about himself that he can handle it now, that he's not going to go postal and destroy any more skies filled with people, so that he has maybe a little bit more of that peace. I mean, he's still not a guy at peace in Crusade. He's obviously got some issues, but at least feeling enough in control that he's not going to do anything he'll regret. I guess that's it.
I was just curious, because that's the one gap there, if you will, that I was, you know, looking to
bridge.
It
would be good to write a story about it, because I think it must be something pretty severe to get him to come out.
Right.
You know? So right. I think that's good material for a B5 story right there.
Well, there you go, Gene. If you can have that to us in the next couple weeks, we'll post it up on the website and and watch the lawsuits come in.
Well, you know what I thought was going to get me into a lot of trouble was making it so that there could be no more Technomages in the future, you know, that they are dying out in the hiding place, and there is not going to be another generation. There's not going to be any more, ever. And that's how I left it. And I kind of thought I wasn't going to be allowed to do that. I really wanted to do it because, you know, it's the passing of the Technomages. They are passing. Their time is ending tragically. But luckily I didn't get in trouble for it. And I got to coordinate with the other trilogy, so that the Technomages who are mentioned in the Centauri trilogy, is it the Centauri trilogy?
Mm-hmm, it is, yes.
Yeah, I think so. Are Technomages that came through the same time as Galen, so they were already made and were not new Technomages, which is something that I'm blanking out, sorry, on the author of the Centauri trilogy. It's embarrassing. Peter David. Whoops. He and I talked, and he originally had his Technomages being newbies, and I said, that can't be. I've decided that there are going to be no more new Technomages. And so he very accommodatingly agreed to make them have been Technomages a while, but he called them cloistered, meaning, you know, they hadn't gotten out in the world, so they'd been Technomages a while, but they were still incompetent because they had no experience.
Right.
So I thought that was good. We were able to coordinate a little bit between the three trilogies about stuff.
I had a question, and it's run away from me now. I'm sorry. Oh, no, it was a comment, actually. It was, you know, you mentioned that you thought you'd get in trouble for basically writing the Technomages out of the Babylon 5 universe. But if you think about how the universe transpires, there's, you know, the Shadows and the Vorlons both get written out basically just a little bit past halfway, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So given that the Technomages are the product of one of those ancient powers, it's kind of not surprising that they go away too. It's a, you know, it's a change in the universe.
Yeah, it seems right. It seems right. That's one of the things that I really loved about Babylon 5 was this feeling of the sweep of history and that it's the end of an age and the beginning of a new age and that races are going away. And the world is, the universe is changing in ways that it's never going to go back. It's changed permanently. And I really like that. It reminds me of The Lord of the Rings, which a lot of things in Babylon 5 remind me of Lord of the Rings. But, you know, the way the elves are passing and we're going into a new age, the age of man.
Yes. Now, Gene, for those of you who are unfamiliar with your own original work, and I'm raising my hand at this point, what of your original work would you recommend to a Babylon 5 fan as starters to get to know Gene Covellos, the author, more?
Well, there's not that much of it that's in print at this point. I've been working on my current novel for about 7 years, and I'm hoping that in another year or two it'll be done and come out and that, you know, at some point people will read it. But of what you might be able to find out there, I did a novella a while back called Negative Space that is, I think, kind of in the spirit of Babylon 5, and that people who like B5 might like it. And other than that, I've got some nonfiction out there that people might find, The Science of Star Wars and The Science of the X-Files, which were very fun to write. And I recently did an essay, Star Wars on Trial, people may hate me for. So took the side of the prosecution. So another thing I'm worried will get me into trouble, but it was really fun to write.
In what ways has working on the Technomage trilogy and The Shadow Within, how has that influenced your own work going forward?
Well, what you see in the Technomage trilogy, I think, are themes that concern me a lot and that are very much involved in the current novel that I'm writing, which is about having a part of yourself that you really wish you didn't have, you know, being driven to do things that you later regret. For example, I got into a really bad habit, okay, it's confession time, where every time I would lose something or I would forget something, I would blame it on my husband. It's like, you know, what did you do with my car keys? Why did I leave my gloves at the movies? You were talking to me, it distracted me, you know? And finally he pointed this out to me after being patient for quite some time. And I realized it, and even after I realized it, I kept doing it. But I'd do it, and then I'd realize, oh my gosh, I'm doing it again. It's like, what is it inside me that makes me keep doing this? I want to stop. It's not nice. I love my husband. Why am I being so horrible to him? And gradually, I have pared way back on my blaming of him. But it was, you know, something inside of me, and it's like Galen having the tech inside of him that urges him to do things. And my current book is about genetics and genetic modification and how we all have predispositions to certain behaviors encoded in our genes. And, you know, yeah, upbringing matters. And, yeah, I still have some degree of choice in what I do. But really, my personality, who I am, a lot of that is predetermined. And how can I fight that? If I find there's a part of me that I don't like, can I change it? How much free will do we really have? So that's, I think, part of what Galen faces, although his problem is a little more external because he has this technology put into him. But once it's in there, it's the same thing. So that's something that, for some reason, I'm really fascinated with and I love writing about.
That sounds like a fascinating novel. I'll have to look for that one when it comes out.
Thanks.
How much time for writing does your running of the Odyssey workshop take away from, or do you just say, okay, for everything leading up to the workshop and including the workshop, I'm just focused on Odyssey?
It's really, really hard. I love working with writers. I was an editor for many years, and I discovered that something I love doing is reading people's work, figuring out what's wrong with it, and figuring out how they can make it better, and helping them to do that. And I worked in New York at Bantam Doubleday Dell for 8 years, and then I wanted to get out of there and make time for my writing. So I did, but at the same time, I wanted to be able to keep working with authors. So I started this Odyssey writing workshop for science fiction, fantasy, and horror writers, and that allows me, each summer, they come for 6 weeks, they come from all over the world, and I get to teach them. It's wonderful, and I get to work with them and help them. And it's something I love doing, but it takes a lot of time out of my schedule. My vow currently is that I write every day, but sometimes I write for 5 minutes, and that's all I have. I try to write for at least an hour, but it's rare that I have more than an hour that I can do it. Because Odyssey is really a year-long thing. Even though the workshop is 6 weeks in the summer, there's planning, there's publicity, there's all sorts of details that need to be set up. So that's something that takes a lot of my time. And I also do freelance editing, and I teach at a local college. I teach writing. So there's a lot of other stuff going on, unfortunately, because I would like to just write. At least have more time to write. I have too many things I want to do, I guess.
I understand that feeling.
I need my DNA to be modified.
Did you ever consider writing, offering up a script for Crusade when that was in production?
No. I don't think that ever crossed my mind. I'm not sure why not. I think I was working on other stuff at the time. I was probably doing the science books, and then working on the trilogy. I'm not really interested in doing scripts so much, because I'm a control freak. And I fully admit that I'm a control freak. Hey, it's in my DNA. I can't help it. But in a book, you get to control everything. You know, you get to decide the setting. You're the set director. You're the casting director. You are the lighter. You're the cinematographer. You're the makeup artist. You're everything. And, you know, yeah, the editor might have a little say or in what you do in the book, but basically it's your baby. And the script, you know, it's really much more collaborative process. There's a lot of people getting their noses in there, and then there's actors and directors who want to change things around. So I kind of rather stay in my domain where I can be a supreme being.
Is there a franchise out there now, a currently running show, who you would love to write a tie-in book for?
Oh, boy. That's a good question. My favorite show right now is 24, which I'm crazy about. I'm not sure how you'd write a Italian book for that. And I'm not sure that I would be fit to do that because you got to know all of those sorts of anti-terrorism details. I guess I'd have to do a lot of research to know about that stuff. But I've done a lot of research for my other book, so I guess I could. So that would be kind of cool. I'm writing an essay right now about 24 and what it does for us. But yeah, that would be cool. I loved Farscape. That was another show that I thought was really terrific. But you know, B5 stands, in my mind, head and shoulders above these other shows. There's just so much more to it, so much more substance, so much more of interest. The characters, the war, the complexity, you know, of the politics and of the moral choices that people had to make, I think were just much more interesting than what I see on most shows.
Yeah, we think so too.
Well, I have...
Well, Gene, I don't have any more questions. How about you, Summer?
I have one last question. Which Forlan was your favorite, Kosh or Ulkesh?
Oh, my gosh. Kosh is the only Vorlon. They're all Kosh.
Jeffrey's not here to revel in the glory.
That was my nod to Jeffrey since he couldn't make it. Well, I'd like to thank you. Thank you so much for spending your evening night with us, Gene.
Sure. It was very fun. You guys are great.
Thanks.
And well, thank you.
We'll put up some links to your books because I know there are some out there in the used circuit someplace, and we'll get people reading them, talking about them again.
Thank you. That would be terrific.
Hey, Mac, you talking to me?
Yeah, you, Mac.
What do you want?
I understand you're quite a computer.
A lot of people seem to think I am, yes.
I also understand a lot of people don't understand everything about you.
Well, that's their problem, not mine.
That's why there's the Typical Mac User podcast and website.
Typical Mac User, eh?
Yeah, they learn all about you, Mac. They learn all the good stuff and the bad stuff.
Surely you're not suggesting there's a bad side to the Mac?
Yeah, you let them decide about that. Typical Mac User podcast and website. TypicalMacUser.com.
Catchy name.
Yeah, I'm gonna go find out all about you, Mac.
The universe speaks. Many languages, one voice. Hope, trust, we are one.
Nice. Yes. Another one of Hillary's marvelous haikus. We have given them a rest, and it was time to bring them back, so I like that one a lot. Very profound, which of course is, you know, how else do you come back from asking Jean Covellos who her favorite Vorlon is?
No. Now there's a classy lady, huh? Does she have it going on or what?
She was a lot of fun to talk to. She very much was. She, you know, it's a different perspective too to talk to somebody who has been involved in the Babylon 5 universe, but comes to it from a different place. Not from the production team, not someone who was involved in the craziness of the day-to-day of getting the show out. But, you know, and her insights were good. And like I said in the interview, she changed my opinion about the Techno Mages, and that's more than I can say for anything Jeffrey's tried to do for me. So.
I'm thinking that I want to, you know what, Mike, if you could just get that little... that one little soundbite where she said, you know, oh,
Kosh. You know, there's only Kosh. We're all Kosh. I'm thinking that's the new ringtone I want on my phone.
You want that one?
We just pull that out of the show. We can sell that for $2.99. It'll be great. I mean,
we haven't explored the B5 ringtone thing yet. Yeah.
Don't we have licensing issues with that?
I can see Jeffrey sitting in a meeting with some high-powered executives. He's pitching a show. This is going to be the one that's going to make him make his name in Hollywood, and all of a sudden, out of his pocket comes my favorite Vorlon. Kosh, of course.
We're all Kosh.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. And then while all eyes are turned on me, I'm like, oh, excuse me, that's for me. Yeah.
We should actually mention or talk a little bit about Yarstow and the job that he did last week for us.
Yes, he did. He did a marvelous job. He stepped in at the last minute when Summer first initially bailed and then has since discovered how marvelous it is to not have to deal with us yahoos. like I said during that show, Yarstow is a smart guy. He's obviously a fan, very witty. It's a lot of fun to talk to him. So
that's right, and there's young men all around the world that would love to have his ringtone.
Hello, this is Yarstow from the Netherlands. I want that on my.
Yes.
I want that on my phone. I do want that on my phone. I can see your point.
Okay, there's Jeffrey in a meeting with high-powered executives.
No.
Hello?
Yeah, I can see it. They all turn around and go, you know Yarstow?
Yeah, you know Yarstow too? Right, exactly. In Hollywood, that's the way it is, too. You bet.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Well, didn't we get a bunch of messages?
We got a little feedback about Yarstow. Yeah, I think we probably ought to play that. Yeah.
Babcom link established. Beginning transmission.
Hi, guys. It's Edmund from Greenville. So, the Yarstow hegemony has been assimilated into Farpoint Media. Or is it the other way around? Far from rolling off my chair, I'm enjoying your ongoing tribute to the old Marvel-DC crossovers. First, you bring in Yarstow for a fanboy's SmackDown crossover, especially the off-air Vorlon bondage segment. Leather shower curtains will just never be the same for me. Then the Babcast meets cover to cover with Gene Cavellos. Next, I was thinking you could take on Winging It, until I remembered the Tequila Show, the Christmas Show, actually, just about any show when Jeffrey's made it home before calling, so that's already a regular feature. Finally, I can't help noting that recently Tim the Younger has sat in for Jeffrey, Yarstow is subbed for Summer. If Tim the Elder, Tim the Brave, the Cal Ripken Jr. of podcasting ever needs to sit one out, I humbly and self-servingly submit that my page and a half of notes are available. I promise not to turn Tim into the next Wally Pip, and I'll even upgrade my pop filter, just to keep Mike from flinching at sentences like this one. Be seeing you.
Now, if there was any way to suck up to me, to compare me to the great immortal Cal Ripken Jr., that pretty much nails it right there. So I guess I'm going to have to come down with a mystery illness now so Edmund can sit in for me.
Actually, I see a possibility for a whole new reality show there that's called The Audition, where everybody has to suck up to us to try and get a chance to be a guest star on our show. That would be...
Wow.
I like that.
Shouldn't you have to successfully argue like bad episodes with Tim for 15, 20 minutes in order to get that working?
Yeah, I think that's going to have to be part of the running the gauntlet.
I'm seeing this as a whole episode of like MXC where you do the
the overdubbing.
Yeah, exactly.
You could take like Larry King Live and just insert our voices over it or something like that.
Well, we can put them out in the yard and throw crap at them across the.
Wow.
I got nothing. All right, what's the next one there?
Babcom link established. Beginning transmission.
Hi, it's Edmund from Greenville again. Now that I've got that off my chest, I did have one comment on, and now for a word, that didn't get crossed off my page and a half of notes. You mentioned Cynthia Torkman's name coming from Torquemada. I think JMS was playing a similar name game with Senator Quantrell. His name brings to mind the Confederate soldier who led a guerrilla war in Missouri attacking Union troops from behind enemy lines. A fitting appellation for someone allied to the Clark forces subverting Earthdome from within, a subversion that becomes even more explicit and Orwellian with the introduction of the Night Watch in the very next episode. You also mentioned JMS comic work. I wanted to mention the one hilarious B-5 in-joke that he put into his series Rising Stars. At one point, the bad set of superheroes go postal on downtown Atlanta, and JMS specifically mentions their destruction of TNT headquarters, his final revenge for the Crusade cancellation. Be seeing you.
Nice.
That's nice.
See, there are no original ideas anymore, are there?
No.
No, of course not. It's just how you package them. In a similar vein, I happen to have read a Futurama comic here recently in which the aliens from Omicron Persei 8 show up looking for Bender, and they show up in the studios of the Bongo Comics where Futurama is being drawn, and Matt Groening himself makes a cameo and says, "Oh, I know where you can find Bender," and gives them an address, and they storm off, and they say, "Well, where's that?" He goes, "That's the address for Fox Studios."
Nice.
Yeah, so I think in the comics you can have all the revenge you want.
Yeah, you just can't get it on TV.
Yeah, that's right. I'm thinking of all those kids who make fun of me in school.
I'm going to start drawing that comic right now. All the time. I was just saying, it's great that Edmund calls us all the time so we know we at least have one listener.
You know, I'd like to see a guest hosting by Edmund and Yarsto.
We could probably work that out for a regular recurring situation where, like, Christmas Eve, Thanksgiving Eve, Easter weekend. You picking up on this?
Memorial weekend.
Exactly.
Canada, yeah. Boxing Day.
Boxing Day.
And the other 4 days, which are the mystery days.
Groundhog Day. Arbor Day.
International Pancake Day.
Yeah. National Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Arr. September 19th.
1st of May.
Yes. I know it starts that day.
And don't forget Martin Luther Kosh Day.
Martin Luther Kosh Day, wow.
Yep, yeah, in his famous I Sent a Dream speech.
Yes. Very good.
Very nice, wow.
Very nice.
All right, that's all the voicemail we got, so.
Yep, I think that's it for tonight.
I think so.
Well, it's a good thing we had a marvelous interview with Gene Cavellos in there to to take care of some of this mess otherwise.
Oh, absolutely. We would have augured into the ground hard. Summer would have been pissed.
Yeah. She'd kick all our asses at the same time. Yeah. Well, Tim, thanks for being on. We do appreciate you showing up.
No problem. I'm assuming that was for me. Which, Tim?
Now I'm talking to myself. I don't care about you.
Tim, you play an important role. You give us somebody to blame when summer comes back and let loose on us. You know, just blame you.
Yeah, but which Tim?
Indeed.
No. You're already part of the crash and burn.
Yeah, I know. This has got my fingerprints all over it.
Okay. Well, before the police detectives come out and start powdering for prints,
right.
Let's get the hell out of here.
So if you'd like to comment on the finely oiled machine that is the Babylon 5 podcast, that number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
the year the train wreck spewed upon us all.
Get well, Summer. We miss you.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, we do.
We'll see you on
so
the other
side. So does everyone else.
And we'll see you on the other side of the gate.